obviously, I don't believe that there is a strict firewall between religion and politics. I think the idea of a firewall is on its face does not go along with the original intent of the founders and the framers of the Constitution, and it doesn't go along with the entire history of both religion and government. Both religion and government are designed to deal with the great questions of how shall we live together? What rules do we follow? What kinds of process do we give to each other when we are in community, whether it's a nation or a state or a city or a church or a family? How shall we get along? How shall we understand each other and our traditions? When you look at the great religious figures of ancient days, how can you not see them as lawgivers? If Moses was not a lawgiver, I don't have a clue what's inside that ark. If Jesus was not a lawgiver and a law reformer and a law refiner, I don't have a clue what the entire birth of Christianity was about, where it was looking at questions of law, of form, of substance. What are the important rules? Are the important rules ritual, or are the important rules what we do with each other? Feeding each other, caring for each other, clothing each other. These are at the heart of all the three major Western monotheistic religions. How do I tear apart the warp and the woof that makes up the fabric of our history, our society, our religion, our politics, into completely discrete, separate strands of religion over here and politics over there? Now, I know the danger of mixing religion and politics. The founders knew the danger of mixing religion and politics. They were trying to escape from those terrible internecine fratricidal wars that had gone on in Europe over distinctions that don't mean anything to anybody today, over these minutiae of Christology and the issues of form and not the content of how we live with each other. What seems clear in our American tradition is that we wanted the government to stay out of religion. We didn't want an established church. We didn't want an alignment of secular power and religious power and that double whammy, which would make dissent even more difficult than it has been from time to time in our American history. And the founders were right to be wary of the unification of the government and of religion. But it was never meant to stifle the voices of the religious and of the faithful. And what has happened so often in the history of religion and politics in America is that we try to define and rebuild this wall from time to time. And by we, I mean left and right, because it isn't simply a liberal conservative issue. This is, if I may use a biblical phrase, a whose ox is being gored issue. Because when the civil rights era was going on, and Martin Luther King and many liberal clergy were marching with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, liberal religion was all in favor of witnessing, of trying to get our values memorialized in law, in trying to tear down laws and customs and practices that offended an internal and religious sense of justice and of brotherhood, sisterhood, peoplehood, and the best that this nation could be. Many conservatives at the time said, this is not what religion is for. Religion is about just just singing, just prayers, just praising God and staying in your congregations, and don't take your religion out onto the streets. Well, the scales fell from their eyes, and they decided that they could take their religion out onto the streets. And so the moral majority and other conservative religious organizations went out and worked. And pretty soon, it was depressed liberals who were saying, go back to your churches. Don't let your religion control who you are. It's been a do-si-do, and that's not okay. Left and right, liberal and conservative, are allowed and should witness to our beliefs. If you witness with complete intolerance and call your opponent damned, obviously that's going over a line. But we can't simply be for religion and politics when it's the religion that we favor. It was very interesting for some of us 45 years ago when John Kennedy was running for the presidency. And many conservatives and many evangelicals and even mainline Protestants were afraid of having a Catholic president, a Roman Catholic president, because would he follow our American Constitution or would he follow what the Pope said? That was the critique coming from the conservatives. Liberals said, this is silly, this is hate speech. He has said that he will be president first, that he will take his own personal opinions and his own personal faith, and they may be important to him, but he swears his oath and allegiance to protect and defend the Constitution. And now another historic do-si-do in two areas. And they're legitimate questions. When John Kerry was running, another JFK, initials anyway, when John F. Kerry was running, there were Catholic bishops and archbishops who said, we're not going to give you communion because you are not anti-choice. They had a right to do that. I think it's terrible and a disservice strategically. They had a right to do it. He had a right to say, no, my oath is to the Constitution. What troubles me is why nobody in the church who said to Kerry, we're not going to give you communion because you're pro-choice, didn't say, we're not going to give you communion because you're pro-death penalty, which is also against the rules as laid out by three popes and the Vatican. So everybody picks and chooses on these issues. Today we have a tremendous problem with church and state. And it's, for somebody that lived through the Kennedy election, it's a terrible irony. Right now people are talking about there are too many Catholics on the Supreme Court. And if Alito is confirmed, it will make five Catholics on the Supreme Court, two Jews. That means only two Protestants on the court, and the Protestants are terribly underrepresented. That this is an issue is offensive. That we are keeping score by this identity politics of religion is offensive. I could tell you, although we'd lose our tax-exempt status, exactly for whom I think you should vote. And you might agree with me or disagree with me, but you would not be swayed by me. You would not feel your soul in peril because I told you to vote one way. We are not simply identified by what our religious views are. And just because we have important and deeply held religious views doesn't mean that they can't be put underneath even a higher set of values and allegiances. The tragedy is that the right reintroduced this issue with Harriet Meyer's nomination, when President Bush said, well, she's an evangelical. She belongs to a conservative church. Draw your own conclusion. She'll vote the right way. I know her heart. That's bigotry. That's prejudice. I don't know how you're going to vote by the church you go to. I don't know how Protestants vote, how Presbyterians vote, how Methodists vote. God knows the Jewish vote is all over the map these days. You used to be able to point to certain denominations having a certain bent, but that was descriptive, not prescriptive. Of course our religion and our politics have to meet and merge. Of course we have to try to find ways for our values to find expression in our lives, in our hands, and in the policies of how we live together. The issue of war and peace is and always has been, to some extent, a religious issue. If you are going to apply or ever apply for conscientious objector status, you better have had a religious doctrine to fall back on, or you might do some jail time. What do you think? Even if you do have a religious background, you could do jail time. But they were looking for a religious rationale. Life and death, yes, choice and anti-choice, are religious questions. The death penalty can be a religious question or a political question. The issue today that should be on everyone's mind aside from the election is torture. Should be a religious as well as a political question. It is both. We are informed or horrified at a level that is deeper and more fundamental than simple reason. There are lots of things that can seem reasonable on the surface. And believe me, I wrote an article, and it's a good red meat article that Sharon and Natalie will enjoy, and maybe some of you will also. I come out against torture, in case there's any question. And it's about how we have dumbed down and defined down torture. We don't approve of torture. America doesn't torture. But we just changed what torture means. Well, we don't torture, but we can do stress positions. We don't torture, but we can put a gun to somebody's head and say it's loaded and we're going to blow their brains out and then click off a blank. But that's not torture. We can throw them in a jail cell, deprive them of sleep, throw cold water on them and let them freeze. But that's just discomfort. It's not torture. I am offended by that at a deep and visceral and moral and, I believe, religious level. Somebody can sit down with me and give me a reasonable and political argument why it's okay. And when I sent out my first draft of this article, I got several responses that told me why it was okay to do this to people. And it can seem okay at the time when you're scared, when it's in the heat of battle. When you have seen a friend's head blown off or ears cut off and you've gone through all kinds of horror, or you believe that somebody has information about where the bomb is planted. This is the new version, by the way. The old conscientious objector was, you don't believe in using violence, but you come home and somebody is raping your wife or your mother. Would you use violence? The new version is you've got a terrorist and that you believe that terrorist knows where the bomb is planted. Would you twist an arm and just how far in order to find out where the bomb is to save a city? And everybody, almost everybody, instinctively says, of course, it's the one against the many. But that's where the religious values come in, and you have a sense of, I might do it. but I am part of something greater and deeper than the ephemeral passions that sweep through me, the fear and the anger that may overcome me. I might even do it, but it doesn't mean that I believe that it is right. Because that moral conviction that comes out of a tradition of examining our beliefs and our intellectual and moral inheritance is a part of who I am as a human being. Religion and politics are not only in the same business of how do we live together, but there are two important methodologies that both share, and a division that both share. When we read Scripture, or when we read the Constitution, the questions are, what do the words say? What was the intent of that passage by those who wrote it? How do I understand that today under these circumstances? It is a hard series of questions in both religion and politics. What does the Constitution say? All men are created equal. Well, the founders thought that that applied to white property-holding males. We tend to believe, and the evolution of law has tended to show, that it means a great deal more. Do we want to go back to original intent? Do we want to confidently say that when that was written, or in the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson meant it only to apply to white property-holding males? That's the question of original intent. And you better have a little humility when you try to read the mind of somebody over 200 years ago. When we do it with Scripture, how much more difficult it is. What was the original intent in Scripture? What was the original intent 2,000, 3,000 years ago in languages, through translation, through retranslation, through mistranslation? How shall we understand it? And how responsible are we for what we see in Scriptures or in the Constitution? It is remarkable. I'm sure this will shock all of you. It is remarkable that anybody with any view can find what they want in the American Constitution or in Scripture. You want to hate, you can find the rationale. You want to love, you can find the rationale. We are responsible for what we see and what we choose. As Unitarian Universalists, we come from a liberal religious tradition, and its methodology, it's more than belief. Because your Unitarian Universalist doesn't mean that we give you the truth about what to believe about God or how to believe what is in the Constitution, but we give you a methodology that is different from an original intent methodology. Strangely enough, Unitarian Universalists are more humble. I know it doesn't seem that way, but more humble than the fundamentalist traditions that say, I know what it says and what it means and what they meant. We say, it's more complicated than that. It depends. What it means may be different to us than it was 200 years ago or 2,000 years ago. And when I see something in the Constitution or in the Scriptures, it is not my job to blame Jefferson or Jesus or Moses. It's my job to stand with and for my understanding with some passion, but also with some humility, because I know that ultimately I am responsible for what I see, what I take in, and then what I do. And we believe that all of you are, too.
You've made a good case for the fact that we need to look to religion to determine what's moral and use that to inform the way we act morally in the world and we advocate for moral policies. However, I don't think that you actually addressed the title of your sermon, which is, does our politics belong in religious institutions? You certainly made a case for our action outside of religious institutions. Now, the Roman Catholic Church has taken a basic approach to religion where they have catechisms, where they take positions on what is right and what is wrong, and they try to make that extremely clear. We in the Unitarian Church try to avoid that. We believe in the democratic process, which means that we don't take positions. Instead, we help people see different points of view. But so in that sense, is it right for us as Unitarians to take a lopsided point of view on a political issue rather than merely promoting some dialogue on what's right?
I have a very firm answer, sometimes. And what I mean by that is, look, there's always the temptation to get swept along with the passion of whatever is going on. And when we make take a lot of very narrow political positions, we will define ourselves more and more alone. In order to be effective, we have to make coalitions amongst ourselves and with other organizations on a case-by-case basis. But there are times when there is an evil or a danger or a challenge that is so overwhelming that as institutions we sometimes have to say, here we stand, we can do no other. I think that those are relatively rare. It is like in relationships. You don't drive the hearse of divorce up to the door lightly, but there are cases and there are issues over which there sometimes you have to take some risks. One of the great, it is okay, as far as I'm concerned, at times to risk even something as holy and as sacred as a tax-exempt status. For a church or a synagogue or a mosque to actually say something. Now, we're allowed to discuss anything, and Chris is allowed to tell you how to vote. I'm not. That's crazy. I can go on as long as Chris can. But I have to be theoretically content free. When you take your tax exemption, your tax deduction for the money that you give to this church, you get that only because you are swearing that you receive nothing of value. And Barbara and I both know that the choir is something of great value that you are receiving. So my answer is sometimes. There are times when during the civil rights era, where Unitarian churches, where temples, where mainline Protestant churches said, look, there is something here that we just have to take a stand on, and if they pull our tax-exempt status, well, okay. If we lose some members, okay. I'll be with you. It's going to be 1, 2, 3. When I was a minister in my first congregation in Northern California, I had Standard Oil execs and executives from Safeway during the boycott of the grape workers were doing of Safeway. It was tough to be a Unitarian and have those jobs in our communities because there were social pressures. During the McCarthy era, the tax-exempt status of First Church Los Angeles was pulled because of the politics. There are times when we have to be fearless, and there are times when we have to build community and give each other the power and disagree with each other. But as Al said, where it's just important to vote, where it is important to get out there and express ourselves to know that we are part of a society. So the answer is sometimes our politics belong in here. And the heart of what I'm trying to say is that it is not a wall between politics and religion, but it is a semi-permeable membrane. And you have to be careful with it and know that it is there and that it has a function. But there are some divisions, but they're not always easy to deal with.